Good morning, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin. This is us turning towards life one more time. And we are delighted to be here as usual. We are on our, Justin just told me, 299th episode this week. So next week we'll be at 300 somehow. I was trying to do the maths on that, Justin, but I think that means like nearly 6 years worth or something like that. And it's quite bonkers. And the sweet thing is, Justin, every time we begin, we have this whole, I'm going to press record, I'll make you co-host. Like, we have this little routine that doesn't seem to be automated even yet. Like, we know what we're doing, but we still have to talk to each other about it and find our way. It's very sweet. So it kind of feels new all the time to me with all the practicalities of it all. So we want to say thank you for being here. And Justin, thank you for choosing this extraordinarily excellent source that we have today, and I look forward to hearing more about where it came from and all those things. And just to say welcome, whoever is here, welcome to all of you, and thank you for being with us. Thank you for sharing the conversation with us, and thank you for all of the emails that you send us and all of the ways that we know this moves you and touches you and impacts your life. We're so grateful to know, and you can always email us and tell us. We love hearing your stories. You can email hello@turningtowards.life and both Justin and I will get your message. And we'd be delighted to respond and say hello and meet you in that way. And of course, if you're live with us on Facebook, your comments are so sweet and welcome and interesting and wonderful to read. I know last week, Justin, there was a person who commented that I'd never seen their name before or any of their comments. And I thought, oh my gosh, there's another person that I didn't realise this was in service of in some way. So just to say, it's a great joy to hear from you, and thank you for being here, and thank you, Justin, as well, for your every weakness.
Thank you, Lizzie. I feel very welcomed by you, and I want to extend my welcome to everyone. It's funny, isn't it, to do this nearly 300 times and for it to still feel new, which is really how it feels to me. And that's part of why I think we have to check in with one another, who's pressing record and who's starting and all those things. But that feeling of it, to me, of it being very alive and never, and not having become rote or automatic in any way. And I still feel a version of the same trepidatiousness, like joyful trepidatiousness that we did the first week that we sat down and did this. We had no idea if anyone would listen or whether we'd be able to keep it up or anything like that. So the only other thing to say before we read the source is that, as you'll know, Lizzie, we are in this little gap between the end of one of our years of the Third Space Professional Coaching course and the beginning of the next one, which begins next weekend. And that's very much on my mind because it was Third Space that gave birth to us knowing one another and to, which involves many, many, many other things, but also very specifically this practice and this project and this conversation. And I want to mention it here by way of honouring where we came from, but also what this is part of. And to say to everyone who's with us, if you're ever interested in finding out what Third Space does, which is a whole load of extraordinary and very beautiful things, you could head to wearethirdspace.org. And it's because of Third Space that we know Joy, who is the editor and compiler of the book that today's source comes from, and through Joy, how we know this piece of writing. So you can always find the sources in the show notes, on our turningtowards.life website, in the Facebook group. And I particularly want to say before we read this piece and begin our conversation, Lizzie, which is called What is Most Holy in Me by Anna Rich, that this comes from a book, a very beautiful book, which I wish I could find. I've been reading it and I've put it somewhere, so I would have held it up for those who are seeing us on video. It's called Please Scream Inside Your Heart. And it is a compilation of writing from a soul writing group that was convened by our friend Joy at New Ventures West in the US. And they have, a group of people have written some really extraordinary and very generous and very beautiful pieces, and it's published in a book that you can buy, and it's worth having, I think. So you can find the link to soulwriting.org and the particular link to the book. And you can get it in lots of places. It's one of those books that all good booksellers should be able to get, I think. Certainly some of the online ones. So here's the source. And with great thanks to Anna for your permission for us to share this, Anna. Thank you. What is most holy in me? Something exquisitely sweet and tender, like a hummingbird's tongue. Some kernel of something, a breath. If I hold still enough, I can feel it. If I move slowly enough, I can hold it in both hands, gingerly, like an offering. I have to be quiet with it, move too fast, and it feels like I may lose it, like holding a tiny feather without gripping it. But I know it's also lodged in there, in here, like the tree I saw that had grown through and around a fence. I'm not going anywhere. This delicate, solid, holy thing. Another breath, another flutter. What is most holy in me? That part that wants to cry out and weep with the world these days and drop onto the sidewalk exhausted, but also to feel the gentle warmth of the sun on my skin once I'm down there.
Justin, what is most holy in me? Something exquisitely sweet and tender, like a hummingbird's tongue. Some kernel of something, a breath. If I hold still enough, I can feel it. If I move slowly enough, I can hold it in both hands, gingerly, like an offering. I have to be quiet with it, move too fast, and it feels like I may lose it, like holding a tiny feather without gripping it. But I know it's also lodged in there, in here, like the tree I saw that had grown through and around a fence. I'm not going anywhere. This delicate, solid, holy thing, another breath, another flutter. What is most holy in me? That part that wants to cry out and weep with the world these days and drop into the sidewalk, exhausted. But also to feel the gentle warmth of the sun on my skin once I'm down there.
Thank you, Lizzie. I think I brought this to us because of how much I need it. And maybe I'm not the only one who finds it easy to lose touch with the goodness in myself and the sacredness in myself. But I'm certainly one of those people. And so reading this is like, for me, it's like a homecoming or a proper remembering, a putting back together what's somehow been taken apart or I've lost track of. So I brought it for that reason, because I can so easily treat myself in very different ways to this, like somehow I'm an object, or somehow I'm worthless, or somehow my life doesn't matter, or somehow there's no solid ground, or somehow I could say it in lots of different ways. So reading, writing like Anna's feels like a very powerful and loving reminder to me of something that's not far away. I sometimes think it's like the glasses on my end of my nose, which I am looking through all the time, but forget are there. So that's one reason to bring it. The other reason why to bring it this week, I've been holding on to this source for a while, Lizzie. And this week, I just finished reading a very short book, the main point of which seemed to be to say, well, you know, we're just atoms. And that, or a version of it, is such a common story in the world. And there are a couple of different versions of it. So one is, we're not just atoms, but we're basically bad. It's a bad thing to be a human. And we ought to be very frightened of ourselves and frightened of one another. Or it's meaningless to be a human. And we're just some kind of total randomness that happened to assemble itself into something that thinks it can think and feel. But really, it's just atoms. And while I agree that we are atoms, I think that's unarguable. I don't for a moment think we're just atoms, because we can write and say and feel the kind of things that Anna's writing. Even that it's possible to say this means that we are this in one way or another. I suppose I have this longing, Lizzie, this large scale longing that I know also are what we've got committed to in Third Space is about as well. For us humans to be able to be more readily in contact with this fluttering, holy, tender, weeping, loving, appreciative, joyful, grateful, generous, something that's in us. And that each of our lives, but the world as a whole, would be very different if we could remember this more often. And it really matters, not just for our own sense of ourselves, but who we can be for one another when we come at life from this place and not from the I'm not worthy or nothing matters place in us.
So wonderful that this has been given language in this way by Anna. And thank you, Anna, for being able to be still enough and quiet enough to find some language that points to something that is gentle and elusive and not gross, but very, very subtle and very powerful. I feel like I was having a conversation with someone yesterday about the threads as a parent of a baby and then them turning into an older one, and how I can anyway, track the kind of qualities that were already there and are just becoming more manifest. And I have more concrete examples rather than just this kind of sense and feeling. But that sense and a feeling feels like it's so substantial that it can be found in everything as time goes on. And there's a particular way of engaging with a human being that's one's child. But I don't feel like it's limited to my child. Like, that's what I love about our work, Justin, is that I don't know which way around it is. I mean, maybe having Vesper, who's now 3 and a half, is helping me to see humans that have been around for a few more years more clearly in this what is most holy in me question. But maybe it's because I was already up to that already that I could see it in Vesper more easily, more readily. And I don't know, they're probably both, it's the same thing. But I'm so grateful to feel the substance of this, because I'm the same as you. There are most times I'm in forgetfulness of this. And yet when I come into contact with it, like now, it's so obvious that it's true. It's so substantial to me that this is, that there is essentialness in each of us. There is holiness in each of us. There is this substantial, sacred presence that each of us is a very different flavor of. And yet it's very real and extremely helpful if we can see this, feel this, sense this, both in ourselves and others as human beings, having a personality, having a structure, which we all have and which we need in the world, has a hell of a lot of benefits. But it's really hard being human a lot of the time. And so having this be something that's central and supportive and real, and that we can be in conversation about it, that we can let it grow in our everyday awareness, that this is what substance is made of, rather than, as you said, the atoms or the gross physicalness of us. And by the way, which I feel kind of imbues everything, and it can always be found in everything, however dark and difficult it is. It feels like a very central and important practice to be in remembrance of this, so that when it is dark and when it is difficult and there is the kind of extraordinary pain that comes and suffering that comes with being human, that this is within reach. Like that this poem and our sense of this and all the other ways we might encounter this wonder of humanness, this magic of humanness, it's not far away at any given point. You know, I'm having this issue with my glasses at the moment, and both of my glasses have broken and I haven't got the right ones for being here with you. And so I've just taken them off because I couldn't actually see you well enough. And it's a little bit like that when my glasses are not the ones I need, or that I'm not functioning with my vision so well, there are certain things that I know where they are and I can reach them even when I can't see. And it feels like this has that quality, that even when I'm blinded by my pain and my suffering, I can feel around, and this can be part of what I reach for, so that in my blindness, in my unable to navigate, and when it's difficult, this is somewhere that I know and it's always there and I can reach for it easily, even when I can't actually see what on earth is going on, or I get into that kind of confusion or trauma response or whatever difficulty I'm in. This seems like the most extraordinary, helpful, supportive, robust sense of life that can bring me home again. It doesn't remove the suffering or get rid of the problems or anything, but it helps me face into things and feel into life without running away or being as destructive as I might have been, and also give me a place to find some, I guess, reconciliation with myself.
I love that word, reconciliation, Lizzie. Like, there's something in us and in everyone that if we can, as Anna says, hold still enough so we can feel it, we can be reconciled with life itself, with ourselves, and with the presence of one another, which is not, I always feel like I want to say this, is not the same as, and you said this in your own way too, not the same as being reconciled with the actions that somebody might take or that I've taken that are at odds with what I value. Not giving up on taking care of life, but a reconciliation in the sense of meeting life fully, meeting ourselves fully, and then being able to respond from there. And I was, when you said reconciliation, what came up in me is the opposite of reconciliation is some kind of fight, some kind of being at war with ourselves or at war with life, which is a very easy way to live, with many, many different parts of us at war, in strife with one another. And then we look out at the world and I see you, or I see someone like Vesper, and if I allow myself to be at war with myself, I might well be at war with you, and I well might be at war with everyone in conflict. And when we hold still enough, as Anna says, there's something very, very tiny that's both very delicate but also solid, like a tree. I love this image of a tree growing through and around a fence, like where the tree and the fence have included one, or the trees included the fence. And I know for myself that when I quieten myself enough that I can find it in me, and I think crucially, and you were pointing to this, when I quieten myself enough that I can find that in another person, and maybe particularly a person that I'm having some kind of difficulty with, that is troubling me or annoying me or I disagree with, not only is there some kind of healing that happens in me, which is of value for its own sake, I'm also much, much, much more capable of responding with all the qualities that I have to bring. And when I'm out of contact with this, when my body gets mobilized and into frantic action or defending myself or grasping, or I'm much less likely to bring whatever wisdom I have to offer, or whatever care I have to offer, or whatever depth I have to offer. And this conversation and this has been particularly helpful for me. I'm very involved in a leadership role in a community at the moment of some 3,000 people, and it's complicated. And it's complicated because in a community of 3,000 people, there are many, many different strongly held views and ideas and feelings and all those kind of things. And I've been noticing how it's very, very easy for me, if I'm not paying attention, to get caught up in the surface of things, in the surface of myself and the surface of other people, and take the thing that's happening right now as if it was the truest thing. And I think what Anna's writing is inviting us into is to this delicate, solid, holy thing, which is everywhere and in everyone, that is on the underneath. We're being invited here into the underneath, into that of us which would weep and feel the gentle warmth and take care and act in right ways and be in relationship, and that the surface of things rarely helps us do that. But if we want to take care of anything deeply and anything over the long term, we really have to, it really helps us to practice dropping into the underneath of things. And that's tricky for many of us because, as Anna says, we have to be quiet to be with it, which might feel frightening, or we might feel too busy, or there might be too much to do, or there might be people making demands of us. We have to treat it like a feather that we can only hold. There's very tiny feathers that when you try to grip them, they fly out of your hand.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is a real call, not just to a kind of living in contact with the sacredness of everything, but also to live in such a way that in the midst of the ordinary everyday of taking care of the dishes and all those kinds of things, but also the way we get thrown around in our relationships and by events, is to keep on returning to this so that we have some contact with that which will resource us and enable us to be in life the way that we are, I want to say it in this funny way, entitled to be. Like is given as a, is always here should we choose to take it.
Yeah. I'm really appreciating, Justin, the sense in me of the kind of underlying commitments to this. It feels like the foundational way of holding any system, whether it's this bodily system or a family system or an organization or a structure that we're a part of, what you were talking about, that the community you're holding at the moment in a leadership way. but I can feel my own sense of this, and sometimes I forget it. And I know it's possible to thread this through absolutely everything, whether it's some boring document or a human being in a twisted difficulty or a system problem that we're trying to look at, or a difficulty. I feel like it's really easy to forget this, but I can also feel how it's so possible to really commit to this on the underneath of something, on the underneath of our lives. That's, and of course, when I say underneath, I mean the thing that supports what's above, the like the deeper currents that on top of which many smaller currents can happen. But to cultivate that deeper current of holiness and cultivate a relationship to it personally in our inner lives feels like such a powerful foundation on which to build anything, without which also I can feel the meaning of things is quite thin for me. Like if I didn't carry this wherever I went in some way and be able to reach for it when I forget and to bring that forth in difficulty and in joyfulness and all of the circumstances I'm in, I'm not sure how fulfilling anything would be. But it seems to me this is like a also an attribute of fulfillment, an attribute of receiving life for myself too, is if I can bring myself with this threaded through like the tree that's grown around through and around a fence, if I can remember that this is life itself, it's a truth of being a human that this is here all the time and it can be reached for when my glasses are broken because it doesn't even know my glasses are broken, it's just here. If I can be in contact with that in my everydayness, the everyday is a very different place than boring or torturous or too hard. Or, and of course, those feelings might be there, but when this is right next to it, it feels very possible to find, to receive depth and to create contactfulness as well. Because of course, mostly this is what human beings are crying out for in some way, because that's the nature of being human, is to be seen as this holiness, to be encountered as this flutter, this delicate, solid, holy thing that Anna says. So I'm appreciating that, as usual, we get to this point, it seems, Justin, that this is about us, but it's about who everyone else is too, and that those things aren't separate. So my capacity to see in this holy way is not separate to someone else's experience of being seen. And that just feels like the central something that is a commitment that we hold very dearly.
As we come to the end of this 299th conversation, Lizzie, I'm really struck by, as so very often, you've reminded me and reminded us through and through this conversation how relationship matters, that this isn't, when you say this is in us, but it isn't just in us, it's also in others. It also seems to me what Anna's writing about is in between us too. As I head off to some meetings in this leadership role that I'm in, that one of the things I'm going to do is that before I go, I'm going to take in my loved ones with Anna's words in mind and feel in them there's something that we can hold in both hands that's like a tiny feather and like a tree that's grown through a fence and is a flutter and delicate, solid holiness. And then when I sit round the table with the other people that I'm working with, as we have some difficult conversations to have and some difficult decisions to make, I'm going to do the same with them. And feel how that also puts me in contact with it in me and what solid ground that makes for our endeavors. So I'm very grateful to that, and grateful as always to you for everything you have to say and everything that you see and what it's like to be in this conversation together. Grateful to Anna and Joy and all the other people who wrote in this book, Please Scream Inside Your Heart, which I want to recommend again. And you can find the link to that in the notes and on turningtowards.life and in our Facebook group. And you and I, Lizzie, we will make plans for our 300th week, whatever wild or very gentle celebration we're going to have for reaching that milestone next weekend. And say to you all, you're very welcome to be in contact. You can email us hello@turningtowards.life or on the Facebook group. And all being well, we will be back again for our 300th week in a week's time.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Justin.
Bye, everyone.